Welcome back to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. After a brief hiatus, I'm glad to be back. Make sure to share, subscribe, and hit 5 stars if you like the show. And if you don't like it, then go kick rocks. On today's episode, we are joined by Coach Joshua Epperson of Freed Hardeman. During a recording, I misspoke and said Freed Hardeman was an NCAA Division II school when they're actually an NAIA D1 powerhouse. Coach Epperson has done it all in his time coaching girls basketball, wearing the hat of AAU coach, high school coach, college coach, and was a member of a major scouting service. He drops a ton of wisdom in this episode, from recruiting to designing offense, so I really hope you enjoy. We're extremely lucky to be joined by Joshua Epperson, the newly named head coach at NCAA Division II Freed Hardeman. Coach Epperson may sound familiar to those in the girls' basketball circle, as he ran a very successful national scouting service, as well as being an assistant coach at Trevecca Nazarene down in Nashville. Coach Epperson also has a ton of experience as a high school coach and as an AAU coach, and these different experiences make him a guest on the podcast that has a wealth of information. This episode of the podcast should be a great listen for players, parents, and coaches at all levels. Coach Epperson, thanks for joining us today.
It's a privilege to be on here and to speak with you. And I've enjoyed your podcast in the past, a great resource for a lot of coaches out there.
Well, I appreciate it. I think most of them have pretty much been targeted for high school and some college coaches, but I'm really excited about this episode as we're getting into summer basketball heating up and just having those conversations with a lot of the parents of our summer kids and kids excited about college. I think this episode in particular is going to be more, be able to reach more people like players and parents. I think will be excited and gain a lot from this episode. So we're really glad you're on with us.
Well, I'm excited too. Should be some good areas to talk about today with them.
So you have the unique perspective of someone who's tried to help players get noticed and get scholarships on one side, and now you're in the position of seeking out players and offering scholarships. And I've had a ton of players and parents ask through the years, what are the best things they can do to get noticed, so to speak? And, it's not the Power Five kids that need the help. They're going to get, they're going to get recruited by everybody but there is a lot of, ranging from Division I to D3 kids, just a lot of, people who are looking for that. So, what are some of the best things for athletes to do to get noticed or to get on someone's radar?
Great question there. Recruiting's a tough thing for parents to sort through and coaches and all of us, and especially this time, with COVID going on, everything else makes it even more complicated. But there's really three things that they need to be working on. Number one is skill work. I think this is one of the things as people talk about getting noticed, we forget the key point here is, are you a great basketball player? You need to continue to work to work on those skills, because that's going to help you get noticed by those that really matter and help you succeed at the next level. And that really leads to the second thing that you've got to be thinking about is bloom where you're planted. Invest in that current condition. Now, whether that be during your high school season, whether it be on your AAU team, you've got to have your feet planted where you're at. And so I think that's really important. We're always thinking about the next step. And if you want to get noticed, be the kid that's actually present, the kid that's actually there and making their program great. That's one of the key focuses for us at Freed Hardeman that's made them great is we work a lot with the high school programs locally and other ones in the past where it's been more on the development of fundamentals and making good basketball players than it is just on the exposure piece, which is important. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's important as kids are finding out today as they're grasping, trying to find that. But the key is, have you made that team successful? Because a lot of times in the recruiting process, we're looking for players on winning programs. We want to, obviously, we have to win at our level. So we're looking for those. You want to get noticed, get yourself on the highest stage possible. And that's the biggest thing you can do is to make where you're at better. Make it the big time there, because we don't think it's all of a sudden going to happen when you're at the college level if you haven't done it before then. And the third thing, which is really important in getting noticed, is make sure you've got film and stats readily available and quality film. One of the bad things that as you watch this live streaming today is a lot of the film is still not very good quality. And number two, if you're a female, wear your hair up as much as you can. It's been a big struggle for me as people the Havilah here, which is awesome and everything, but it's in the way you can't see their number. And so that really hurts. And then the film quality is not very good. So make sure you've got film that's available. Full game highlights obviously can help, but they're going to want full game at some point to really get an idea. And the stats, per se, you need percentages. You need team stats. How's your team done? We're not talking so much just about points per game. I think that's one of the things. I talked about this a while back with a player when I was coaching high school. We had one of the top teams here in Tennessee, and the girl had started taking some really bad shots, and she was probably our fourth best player in a high school team, but we were very good. So she was a college level player, but her percentages were starting to drop. So I had to bring her and her dad in and just talk to them because they wanted to be in the paper more. They wanted those points per game to go up. And I told them, at the end of the day, our team success and also your efficiency as a player is really going to be mean more than you taking bad shots just to try to get your points per game up. And so really important to make sure that you have those stats available, have that film available so that you can send it out and this, so that, you know, it's available to coaches whenever they need it.
You know, it's funny. It's so simple, but just hearing you say it, you know, it really resonates is be a great player. I mean, does it get any more simple? Right. Like, okay, you want to play in college? Well, be a great player. And, you know, in a day and age of social media and everybody wanting to put out, I think sometimes, or at least it feels like at times, people mm-hmm. put as much energy and effort into looking like they are becoming a great player as they are becoming a great player. And, you know, so
amen.
That's,
yeah.
That's just a simply put, a, you know, a great way to put it. And, you know, you definitely talk about being where your feet are. And gosh, I mean, I think that goes for the coach and the player, you know, and it's just, we have so many opportunities to get better every day. You know, and I challenge other coaches as well. You know, we tell our kids, you know, did you work on your game all summer? Do, you know, and we say, you know, we give them this list of things to do and things to work on. And if we come back the same, I don't know why we would expect, and, you know, we didn't work on our craft. I don't know why we would expect our players.
That's right.
To not, you know, to come back better if we're not doing it, you know, if we're not being the leader of our journey. But, right. You know, definitely,
yep.
You know, and I think the other thing with kind of being where your feet are, you know, obviously you have to be a great player. Nobody's going to give a scholarship to the sweetest kid at school. You know, we like that kid, but I
right.
think it does, you know, the more positive impressions you make on people, the more people do want to help you. You know, I find myself
right.
going
Correct.
Out of my way for kids that don't even play in my school because I just think they're great kids. And
yes.
it's just, it's funny how, you know, I think a lot of times people may, you know, may make a false equivalency of saying, well, you know, this person, you know, people are pushing her more or pushing, you know, that player more, and that's why they're getting it. Well, you know, okay. They probably do have the talent, but if a lot of people are trying to help them, it probably tells you a lot about who they are and, you know, making
yes.
those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Why? And one of the things with that that's a good story is, you know, we went to Caitlin Wilkes from Kentucky up from Lincoln County High School up there. Coach Hibden and I went into a visit to watch her practice once. And when we were there, one of the people that was across the way, he came over to find us essentially. It was the janitor. And he was talking about how amazing of a person Caitlin was. And the second thing, which I always find is true a lot of times, he's like, she's also the kid that's wanting to get in the gym the most. And for us as a coach, those are two things, right? The janitor, she's treating them well. And then number two, on top of that, we love the fact that the kids, they're having to kick the kid out almost, and the kid's always wanting to get in the gym. So that was big for us.
Gosh, man, what an endorsement. When, you know, we talk about treating everybody, you know, that you're associated with respect. And, you know, the janitor is usually the first, like, example that we bring up. When that person is endorsing you, I mean, that speaks volumes. And that doesn't surprise me with her either. So that's just an awesome story. So, you know, those things don't go unnoticed. But how powerful would it have been, Coach, on the flip side, had the janitor said, she's a mess. She threw, you know, she leaves her stuff everywhere. She's disrespectful. Mm-hmm. What would that have done for you guys recruiting her?
Well, it would have, especially then we were on the fence a little bit. I mean, not in a bad way, but just the beginning parts of recruiting. You're always on the fence as far as trying to find out about a kid, because all of a sudden that kid gets moved off your list or the low part of your list, you know? So, and it, That's the thing. Unless, and this is the thing with recruiting, it's an ebb and flow. You know, I always, we were talking about, you know, when does it start and stuff like that for people. Well, you know, for her, you know, that was towards the beginning, towards the end of her junior year per se there. So, you know, we were really getting things going. Her recruited really heated up with us, you know, and she was able to commit early and everything went well because of stuff like that. Now, if things like that are against you, that's also where sometimes, in some of these cases, these players, their recruitment doesn't go until later, and people are wondering why, because they're such a good player. Well, a lot of times they've hit those snags along the way because they haven't done some of the little things. So that can hurt them as well.
Man, that's just an awesome specific example for everyone to hear. You know, as far as like, you know, parents are maybe wondering, you know, like timeline, like when is all this going to happen? And, you know, what can you say to maybe calm some of the nerves for some of these parents?
Yeah. Good question. Good thought. You know, key thing is you have a younger player, you know, you have time. The big thing for you right now is to be doing a lot of the groundwork. We talked about the skill stuff, the other stuff they can be doing, but you could use this time really to do a lot of research online. Now, the benefit we have today versus in the past was we do have the internet. We do have a lot of resources to find out about colleges. Take a lot of interest surveys for your child. A lot of times this is something that's left out, but it's something that's very important is you're wanting all stuff with colleges, but a lot of times the kids don't even know their major. They don't know what really matters to them in the college they're going to, how far from home. Like, this is a good time because recruiting in some ways puts a pause on it for our 2022s and 23s, you know, those that you can really start helping your child really focus on those. And the other thing too, to really calm yourself and be thinking about is how much are you focusing on the ACT? We have a kid that I've had before, an amazing player, D1 player. And one of the snags we really hit with her recruiting was her ACT score is not very good. And she was so busy with everything else, she really couldn't work to get it up anymore. And so it was just a frustrating thing for them, I'm sure, because she was a D1 player that just the ACT score was her hindrance. Well, this is a good time for everybody to kind of put a pause on it and be doing all the prep work, do all the things you can to put the student part first before the athlete again. It's really focus on that part now, you know, to get back to basics for these young ones. Because the key is for most of them, unless they're a Power 5 kid, it's okay. You may be seeing on social media right now all these kids getting offers, or it seems that way. But if you notice, it's the same kid getting a lot of offers themselves. So, you know, and the fact is that kid's only going to go one place. And so, you know, it's a domino effect. Things will happen. Once that kid commits, it's going to help your kid a lot. And so, but it's not going to help your kid if they're worried about just trying to get their stuff out on Twitter all the time instead of worrying about the fact of where they actually getting better and are they ready to make the choice later on. The thing that's tough in recruiting is some recruiting process is so different for some people, but you have to make sure you're ready when the offers start coming too. A lot of people want the offers, but they don't want to be ready to make the decision because just like in real estate, when you make an offer, they have to make a decision quickly. You know, sometimes when schools make an offer to you, you're going to have to make a decision whether or not you want to go to that school. And so you're pushing for that offer, but are you ready to accept it if that happens? So you got to make sure you're pushing for something, but do you really want it? Are you really ready for it? Do you know that's the school you definitely are ready to say yes to? If not, you better be making sure you're doing all those other things beforehand too. So,
you know, that's a great bit of advice. And one thing I'd even like tack onto that is, I think it's it's up to the people in these athletes' lives who understand the process or who should be understanding the process to convey that information. You know, I have had kids that have had an offer on the table. Someone else in that position that coach had offered takes it, and then they lose it, and they kind of feel like the rug was swept out from under them, you know. But, you know, hopefully the college coach is explaining, hey, this, you know, we may have offered someone else such a position, but that's not always the case. You know, I mean, they don't always tell you that, you know, they don't. Right. And, you know, I think that's just something that if they've never gone through it, they have no idea. You know, they probably think that's a lifetime offer. And you know,
right. Yeah. And they're not there forever. I mean, you know, and every coach, man, it's just so different. There's an example of a coach in Tennessee that, you know, offered three on the same day and just said, hey, there's one scholarship, whichever one of you three takes it, you know, and two of the three, pretty much all but one of the kids hadn't even visited campus there. And so But the one kid that had took it before the other two had a chance, you know, to do anything. So, and that happens all the time. But it's one of those, do you have somebody, you need to find out who are you really going to lean on to give you good advice, and why? Why are you leaning on those people? Because that's really important to, do they have experience? Do they have really your best interest long term? You know, is it, are they giving you the advice because they want you to go D1 because it makes you look, you know, makes them look good? Or, and nothing wrong with D1. I mean, obviously you got a lot of D1 kids out there. It's a great opportunity for a lot of people, full rides and things like that. But it's not for everybody. That's a small percentage that gets to play D1. So making sure that that's the right thing. One thing that's interesting with girls basketball is, you know, D1s have 15 full rides. Well, as most of us know, when you're recruited as a 13th or 14th player, that's a tough spot to be, because you'll probably get recruited over top of the next year because they're recruiting a kid that thinks can be a top 7 or 8 player. And so a lot of these players really need to be looking at whether or not that's really a good fit for them. And part of that is, you know, historically, obviously transfers is an issue, but right now girls basketball has the highest rate of increase in transfers of any sport out there. And so, and a big part of that is, I mean, it's like 39% of players transfer in D1 girls basketball. And so a lot of that is happening because these kids are 13th, 14th, or 15th kid. They don't know they're that kid, you know, and nobody's advised them that, hey, you probably are, you know, so you need to let people know it. That's a good, anyway, thing for them to know.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've having also been, you know, coached a little bit at the D2 level. That's a great plug for D2 basketball, but it's the absolute truth. You know, do these people have someone in their lives that love them enough that are going to have an honest conversation and say, look, honey, you know, I love you, right, but you can go, you know, like, look, you know, you got this offer awfully late in the game and, you know, you're talking about going and, you know, maybe sitting, you know, at a low, you know, maybe a low D1 or maybe a mid-major, you know, or you can maybe go to a good D2 school, compete in front of a good crowd and, you know, and compete for a championship and get, and maybe play right away.
Exactly.
You know,
and the same thing true is why within D1, right? Because a kid may have the opportunity to be 14th or 15th kid at a high or mid major, but maybe instead they get an offer from a lower D1 where they can go play, contribute, have a great experience. And I think that's the big thing there is get your education paid for and get a great experience while you're there. And so trying to find that fit to do it within whatever level that may look like for you.
Coach, we've had 2 missed basketballs transfer from a Power 5 school in the last, you know, just this last year. And, you know, they transfer to places that they're going to go play right away and compete. And, you know, I think, and they're both awesome kids. And, you know, I think it's just, it speaks volumes, you know, for at the end of the day, what did they want? You know, but they've got, you know, they got to see both. There's nothing, you know, if you enjoy going and, you know, whatever you like is what you like and more power to whatever you want.
Right.
But I just think, you know, having people that will have these honest conversations and, like you said, not push kids to the highest, you know, the most notoriable or the most notoriety, I guess is what we need. And to that end, you know, what role does the high school coach play in all this? Because, you know, I've been able to be, you know, I've coached in the summer a lot. I've coached high school basketball for a while. And, you know, I see there's a lot of headbutting that goes on instead of, you know, and kind of and I think that's unfortunate. But I see a lot of high school coaches that are kind of divided. Some of them say, well, it's not my job. That's their summer coach's job and I'm not going to help, which I think is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And then you've got a lot, you know, you got a lot that really want to help, but they just have no idea how,
No idea. So, sure.
Yeah. What do you tell those high school coaches?
Yeah. Good man. Some great stuff there with that. So number one, I think that's the big thing. And I know it's tough for it to ever really happen, but hopefully everybody's got the best interest of that child in mind. You know, the travel coach, the high school coach, the parents, everybody, you know, that support staff. So I think the first thing that has to happen is have a good sit down meeting with the high school player, get them on the same page. Now, speaking also to the player in this instance, you know, there is a personal responsibility that needs to be on that player. They've got to be the person communicating. They've got to be the person talking. One of the biggest pet peeves of mine is when I get stuff from parents when they're the ones reaching out. And that's kind of the benefit of being a college coach versus a high school coach, I get to recruit the parent, not just the kid. And so I'm really looking at, man, this parent seems really pushy, but the kid doesn't seem like they care, you know, so that's not a good sign to me. But going to that high school coach, getting on the same page. So number one, do you definitely want to play at the next level? And having that honest communication with the high school coach. If that's something the player wants, great. Okay, what are some things you're looking for in that schools? You know, what things, as we're talking to school, can I help you that you need in schools? You know, are you wanting to play right away? Is it more about going Ivy League? You know, whatever that may look like. And then third, the next thing is, once you have that piece, is putting together some information together that you can put out there. The big key here is the player needs to be the one doing as much as possible. The coach is there to guide them through that process and to help them as needed and to be that reference and things like that. And the coach can help in a lot of different ways with that. But the player needs to play a role there as much as possible to own their recruitment. Because let's go through the worst situation that happens all the time. Coaches change jobs, right? So if a player doesn't do that and all of a sudden the coach takes another job, they're out of luck if they've just been counting on that coach to do everything. And so, but that coach can help them make sure the stats are available. You know, a lot of these people, do whatever you can. I don't care if you have to get the math teacher at your high school to help you get accurate stats. It's going to help a lot as you're trying to get this player recruited. Helping them have a good weight program is a really big thing, because then you can have some measurables in the weight room to help them grow. One of the biggest things we saw at Tribeca was a lot of players suffered their first year getting on the floor, not because of the basketball skills. It was a lot of time was just about the fact that they may have come from a school that didn't have a good strength and conditioning program, and mostly on the strength part. And so they had a year of just getting the weight room to get themselves caught up to where their teammates that had actual strength programs at their high school that were ready to go. And so they were behind a year because of that. So one of the things a high school coach can do is make sure you're preparing them that way, have that program to help them get ready, because weightlifting is a big part of the college game. And so you can't neglect that these days too. But yeah, just being their reference, making sure they have good film, you know how that is. That's a big thing there too. And making sure you're ready to send it out for them, speak for them, be that reference for them. And also understand, as a high school player, your high school coach needs to be able to be honest to people. If you're not a D1 kid, don't pressure your coach to speak and to essentially lie about you to say that you are, because it's not going to help their program long term. And as we talked about earlier, it's not really going to help you either. And so don't put them in that kind of awkward situation where, like, I had a player once that thought they could play at UConn and they didn't have any offers going their senior year. And I'm like, listen, if you could play at UConn, you would have some things. And so it's one of those things. And when they put you on that phone, like, they somehow get this coach on the phone when you're like, I don't know what I'm going to tell this coach, because you can't play at that level, you know? So that's where you have to have that honest conversation in that room between the coach and make sure you're on the same page.
And yeah. And I really encourage the high school coach too. You know, we love our kids and we want to, you know, we want to see them go be successful, but it is also our responsibility to tell the truth. You know, I see so many coaches, you know, they'll talk about a player and they're like, man, I have to throw her out of practice. She's uncoachable. They say, you know, all these things and all the grief they get, and they call the college coach, oh, you're going to love her. She's a sweetheart, you know? And
right. Exactly.
They get there and these college coaches are like, what the heck were you talking about? You know, like, this ain't that kid. And you lose credibility, and you owe every kid you're ever going to coach that credibility. So, you know, it's unfortunate, exactly. But you have to be honest about those kids for all of your next ones.
Definitely.
This could be a two-part episode, because, you know, I could sit here and talk about this side of it all day, but I do want to pick your brain on the basketball side of it as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, one area I see that most high school coaches struggle in is designing offensive systems to fit their players. You know, we can't recruit. I mean, well, you know, some people do, but, you know, we're not full-time paid pros at this. So a lot of times coaches take whatever offense they've run as a player or they've run in the past, and they just continue to run it because that's what they know and that's what they're comfortable or good at teaching. You know, so what advice or directive can you give coaches who might be looking at the roster and thinking about how their players can be most successful?
Well, that's a good point. And I think the biggest thing that's helped me go into the college game from high school was you have to learn to be flexible if you're going to be successful in high school. Every year, my teams look different. I think that, you know, you got to look at three things. If you want to design an offense, it's really going to help you. Number one is, how are you going to score on the inside? And that's going to really start the conversation for you. If you have a dominant post that can shoot, score at the back of the basket, then awesome. You better use it, because that's rare these days. or if you have somebody you think you can develop there. So that's number one as you design that. Number two, obviously, or a part of that, obviously, is if you can't get it from a back to the basket post, you have some people that can cut, and you can hit them there. Use some athletic ability to hit them on the cutting action. And then, you know, if you can't do it that way, then obviously now we see it more and more as you have some penetrators that can really finish when they drive and get to the basket. And so, you know, you look and you've got to get that as you develop an offense. You really, to be consistently good, you have to start with a good inside presence, whatever that may be. A coach I worked with, kind of my roots per se, we're in Lubbock, Texas. I worked with a guy named John Copeland, who is known for his five out offense. And we still have post play. Shoot, we had a 7-footer on our roster, but the guy was really good at cutting and doing some things like that. We didn't start him inside. Across the road was a guy named Bobby Knight. Most people know, or I hope they know. And that was at Texas Tech. And he was known for his motion offense too. And that was the big thing for him is, you know, starting with that inside action to create good shots on the outside. And I still think that's true today for us as we go forward. So that's first, inside scoring. Second is, look really at the ball handling that you've got available. How many ball handlers do you really have? Because that's going to influence what you do. If you don't have any, one of the best things I would recommend to a coach, especially if you don't have a great point guard period, which always is an awful situation to be in, is to look at Kelvin Sampson came up with some good videos. I have them on VHS, which doesn't help me much anymore because I don't even have a VHS player. But he had some great stuff on a zipper set out of a box set that really could relieve some stress, get you into where you get that initial entry pass. Because a lot of times that's the big thing if you're at the high school level is, can you get that first pass to get yourself into an offense? And so really good. Look at some box set stuff that you can really – you're going to have to be very set oriented, you know, if you don't have a good ball handler. If you have a lot of them, you know, that's one of those things. You can't have too many good ball handlers on the floor sometimes. So that's one of the originations of the dribble drive offense was the guy was like, man, I got two stud point guards. I want to put them both on the floor. And so, you know, he put both up at the top there and really created some things that were great from it. So that's second, ball handling. And the third is your athletic ability. Sometimes you have to look at that and see, do we have enough athletic ability that we can press, so we can trap? And that will dictate your offense per se, because if you're able to get some things from steals and presses and things like that, it can determine what you do in that way. If you have a team that's really athletic, you may not want to be as much set oriented because you're going to maybe have to flow into more motion, more things where you just have to base it on the fact that you're creating offense with your defense. And so your athletic ability can do some of that. And if you're not athletic, then you may have to do the opposite. Hey, we're going to have to slow this thing down, dictate the pace more with our sets and with continuities and things of that nature. And so really look at those three. Obviously, there's a whole lot more you could set to set your offense, but those three can really get you started.
I think that's really good. And, you know, if, you know, I may give, you know, give your email out there to some, to the high school coaches. And, you know, I think a lot of times people are looking for resources too. You know, you can YouTube, but you know, there's just having some good directive, resources, I think would help. Coach, let's get into the last segment here. I'm gonna throw a full court press on you. Okay, we're going to be a rapid fire series of questions, and you'll have about 10 seconds or less to answer each question. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Does high school need a shot clock?
Yes.
Did you think that when you were a high school coach, though?
No. All right. I didn't, actually. I wanted to have a chance to win sometimes. I didn't have the team. I needed that. The lack of a shot clock. But now that I'm a college coach, I think it would be great to have one.
All right, great. Yeah, thank you. All right, up 3, 8 seconds to go when the ball is at half court. Are you fouling or are you playing it out?
You know, I've always played it out, so I take it that's my answer. But by the book, I would say you should foul. So I take it that's what you should do. But I think in the spur of the moment, it's tough because you believe in your kids so much. A lot of times you just let them play it out.
All right. The absolute best basketball resource you've found during the quarantine?
There's a guy named John Lorenzo. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. He does some stuff. He's the assistant coach at Cedarville. He is awesome. If you don't follow his Twitter account, you should. He also has some really good websites as well. But he has some great resources for college, high school coaches on designing offenses. He's really an offensive guru. We had to run into him at Trevecca. So great resource there for coaches.
Yes, he does some great YouTube videos as well. I've been able to steal a lot of his stuff. And John Leons was definitely a good one to steal from and a good follow. Well, Coach, we're out of time, but I mean, this was awesome. I really think, you know, I think this episode may hit more, more ears and make an impact than maybe we've done. So we really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Hey, and definitely let coaches know if everyone's come to practice or anything, get in touch with us. Love to have them come watch us.
All right. Sounds good, man. We'll see it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
For Coach Epperson, this has been Wyatt Faust, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. Join us again next Thursday as we have Coach Aaron Stamm and Coach Scott True on to talk about tackling tough parents and other topics that don't normally come up in your everyday clinic. Until then, keep getting better.